85. I'm James Spann with the Alabama Weather Network on Tide 100.9. It's 55 degrees in Tuscaloosa.
The Gary Harris Show. You see him host Tider Insider TV. Crimson Tide Kickoff. Play-by-play for Alabama sports and sports director for WVUA 23. It's time for the Gary Harris Show on your home for Alabama sports. Tide 100.9 and streaming on the Tide 100.9 app.
All right. Good morning, everybody. Welcome to the Gary Harris Show. Brand new week. This is Monday, October the 13th, 2025. I'm your host, Gary Harris. My main man, Chase Brumfield, manning the controls, taking your phone calls on the Gary Harris Show hotline at 205-342-9904. And we are ready to rock and roll this morning. Get it going for Tennessee week for the Crimson Tide, the third Saturday in October. And it is a big football game. After winning 15 in a row over the Vols, Tennessee has won two of the last three over the Crimson Tide, including last year in Knoxville. And this game is noteworthy for the Alabama being at home because Alabama beat Georgia in Athens and beat Mizzou in Columbia, ending those home winning streaks. Alabama now has the longest home winning streak in the country at 15 games. How about that? Alabama's also won back-to-back-to-back games over ranked opponents. So the Crimson Tide is rolling halfway through the season at 5-1, 3-0 in the SEC, ranked number 6 in the country in this week's AP Top 25 poll, and getting ready for the showdown against Tennessee. It is a huge week for the Alabama Crimson Tide, as if they can win on Saturday, Bama will be 4-0 in conference play. So a lot to play for the Crimson Tide, as Alabama is squarely in the hunt, probably right now, as we talk, the favorite for the SEC championship game spot in Atlanta, and clearly a national championship contender. And that is noteworthy because the way Alabama played in the season opener at Florida State, I'm not sure a lot of people had confidence that the Tide would be sitting here at this point in the season 5-1 and 3-0 in the SEC after losing the way they lost down in Tallahassee. Quite frankly, just did not play well in the game, but bounced back with a 73-0 win over ULM, handled Wisconsin, and then went into SEC play, went to Georgia and won, came home against Vanderbilt and won, went to Mizzou and won. So that's where we're at now. Alabama is back. It's a week-to-week endeavor now. You have to do it again every week. And for the Crimson Tide, it will not be easy against the Tennessee Volunteers, a team that held off Arkansas just barely in Knoxville on Saturday. But Alabama gets it done up in Como. And, again, I have to say the reality of it is that it was not an easy game. We didn't think that it would be. But we did think that Alabama would find a way to win the game, and they did, 27-24, despite making quite a few mistakes, not playing their best, but playing well enough to beat a team that was undefeated and riding a long home winning streak. So Alabama, to get to this point in the season at 5-1 and 3-0 in the SEC, has proven, in my opinion, that they are a top-tier football team. Now, 6 games to go, 5 of those games in the SEC. So there are no gimmies, and there are no freebies. And you got to prove it, like I said, every week. And there are a lot of teams out there that are capable of beating Alabama. That is just the truth. All right, it's 12 minutes after the hour of 9 o'clock. Let's go ahead and take a phone call, and then we'll go to the break, and we'll take more phone calls on the other side. We've also got Kalen DeBoer. But wait, I tell you what, let's do this, Chase. Let's go ahead. Let me get the sponsor out of the way and our guest list out of the way. Take a break, then we'll come back with phone calls. We've got Rodney Orr from TiderInsider.com coming up at 9:30. Casey Smith on golf at 10:30. We'll hear from Kalen DeBoer. We'll get to your phone calls. This hour, the Gary Harris Show is being brought to you by Alabama Credit Union. Member-owned and not-for-profit, it really is just a better way of banking. Alabama Credit Union, you can find out more at alabamacu.com. That's alabamacu.com. Alabama Credit Union, loans for real life. Some rules and restrictions still apply. See if you're eligible for membership and join today and feel good about your money. And put a little extra change in your pocket. All right, it's 9:13. We'll take a break, and we'll come back with Bryce and Corey on the other side to get it started here on the Gary Harris Show. It's Tennessee week, and everybody's pumped up in tea time. We're back after this.
What's trending on the Tuscaloosa Thread.
Good Monday morning. The Alabama Supreme Court has appointed 24th Judicial District DA Andy Hamblin to serve on the Standing Committee on Rules of Criminal Procedure. The duties of the committee are to ensure court procedures remain consistent, efficient, and fair. The 24th Judicial Circuit of Alabama serves Fayette, Lamar, and Pickens counties. Click TuscaloosaThread.com for more West Alabama news, sports, and weather coverage. It's free throughout the day. Don Hartley, Townsquare Media, Tuscaloosa.
As much as Innisfree has evolved, it will always be that place to escape and have a good time. Whether it's for a game day weekend, to reminisce on college days, or to create new memories, if you're looking for a good time, there's only one thing to do. Head to the Free at 1925 University Boulevard. And don't forget about the Lucky Lunch Meet and 3 special.
Contact Courtney White at 205-242-5127. NorthRiverTimberCO@gmail.com. North River Timber Company.
Tide 100.9. Tuscaloosa weather.
Dry weather continues through the week. The sky's sunny today, the high 82. Clear tonight with the low at 57. For tomorrow and Wednesday, a good supply of sunshine both days with warm afternoons, highs between 82 and 85. I'm James Spann with the Alabama Weather Network on Tide 100.9. It's 55 degrees in Tuscaloosa.
You see him on WVUA 23 covering sports and on Tider Insider TV on Tuesday nights. Don't miss a minute of the Gary Harris Show. Weekdays from 9 to 11 on Tide 100.9.
You're no strangers to love. You know the rules, and so do I. 9:17, welcome back into the Gary Harris Show. Tennessee week, the third Saturday in October. It is, it's a big one. That's no doubt about it. Alabama also looking to get a little payback after Tennessee beat the Tide last year. Tough loss for Bama up in Knoxville. But this Saturday night, that's a 6:30 kick, a little bit after it, Saban Field at Bryant-Denny Stadium. Bama will be looking to move to 4-0 in the SEC and 6-1 overall. All right, let's get to some phone calls on the Gary Harris Show hotline at 205-342-9904. And let's start it off with Bryce. Hey, Bryce, good morning.
Good morning, Gary. You picked it right. You said it'd be a close. You said it'd be a close game, but we'd win.
Yeah, I was right on point on this one. I picked it 35-28. It came out 27-24. So I was pretty close. It played out about the way that I thought it would. I thought that Missouri would be competitive for four quarters in the game, but that Alabama would have a little too much. The only thing I will say is I feel like Alabama had enough mistakes in the game that if they played a little cleaner, I think they could have won the game by a little bit more. But man, you'll take it. You know, on the road in this conference, to win a game, to win at Georgia and snap their home winning streak, and to win at Mizzou and snap their home winning streak, that's pretty impressive.
Well, here's how I see it this week. I don't think Aguilar's played with and on the road against the 103,000 fans screaming at night in Tuscaloosa, Alabama. So I think we'll win the game. However, going to Auburn, I think Missouri comes in, wins 10 points or more. Auburn's drained. They can't get up. That's why I see it. And I look for South Carolina to beat Texas because Texas is going to have their heads in the clouds. And I think the Vanderbilt and Bobby is going to put it to them at home in Nashville.
Going to be some interesting matchups, and you pointed out a few. Yeah, Auburn is I'm going to be interested to see how they play after a tough loss at home. So much is being talked about the officiating. They were up 10-0. They were in position to go up 17-0, fourth and goal, or a goal-to-go situation. I can't remember if it was fourth down or not. But quarterback Arnold tried to reach the ball out over the goal line. It got knocked away. George recovered. And Auburn certainly felt like he broke the plane. But, I want to say this, because there's so much now about officiating with Auburn. They blame the loss at Oklahoma on officiating. Then they said they didn't feel like they got good officiating at Texas A&M, and now this. You still got to play through those things. And they still had a 10-3 lead at the half. And even after the fumble, they let Georgia go 80-something yards at the end of the half, kick field goal. And then in the second half, they got dominated. Now, there's no other way around that. That's not to say that, certainly that was one of those calls that if you're an Auburn fan, you feel like you got hosed. If you're a Georgia fan, you say, nope, he got knocked out before he crossed the plane. But regardless, there was still a half of football to go. And in the second half, Auburn got dominated. After starting the game out so well, they did nothing offensively in the second half, which has been a problem. So, the reality of it is, whether you should have won those games or could have won those games, you're 0-3. And like we've talked about, there's a small margin for error. Alabama's 3-0, and a few plays the other way, they might be 0-3, but they're not. And Auburn is. And that's who you are. That's what you got to deal with. And I'll be interested to see how they play against Mizzou on Saturday.
Well, I think Jerkowicz, I told him, he's a better coach. And Free, I've been rooting for him all year because they're going to fire him, and I didn't want that to happen. But, hey, bring on James Franklin. I'm all in for that.
All right. Thank you, Bryce. Good phone call. Let's get to Corey from Trustful. Hey, Corey, good morning.
Good morning, Harry. How are you this morning?
Doing well. Thank you.
I'm very proud of the way Alabama was able to come through with the win. Like you said, if Alabama could have finished off the drives with touchdowns, they could have blown the game open more. And really, if you look at it, there was a point where Alabama could have gone up 24-7. And if that would have happened, I think Missouri would have tapped out, and I think the game would have been out of hand there. And I think Alabama would have been a much comfortable situation. But when you have to settle for field goals and not touchdowns, that's when you keep your opponent in the game. And then in the second half, you fumble on your first play of the drive, and then they take advantage of it, and game on from there. But Alabama was able to push through it and got a key fourth down conversion late, and then turned that into a touchdown. And then all Missouri needed was a field goal, and Dejon Lee got a key interception and sealed the game. But it's one of those. This is one of those games that you look back and you say, "Okay, yes, good win," but you feel like it's going to come back to bite you if you don't put teams away that are much better than Missouri. Would you agree?
Well, you're just trying to find a way to win the game. And first of all, I don't know, if they're going to play that many teams that are much better than Missouri. I think Missouri is an upper-tier SEC team. Now, we'll see over time. I'm not saying you won't play some teams that aren't good, but to say that there are going to be teams that are much better than Missouri, I don't know that that's necessarily the case. I do think, Corey, that you have to play cleaner. You don't want to make mistakes. You don't want to have penalties. You don't want to leave opportunities out on the board. I still think Alabama needs to get better. Yeah, I'm with you there. But I don't look at a team left on the schedule, whether it's Tennessee or South Carolina or LSU or Oklahoma or Auburn, and say, wow, those teams are a lot better than Missouri. So I think the last three teams that Alabama's played, Georgia and Vanderbilt and Missouri, might be as good as anybody else that they have left to play. So, but does Alabama need to play better? Yes. I do think they need to do that, Corey.
Yeah, I agree. I just think Alabama needs to cash in on their opportunities for touchdowns when they can, because you never know how many points you're going to need to win a game. But look, going forward, this is a huge game for Alabama. Alabama hasn't lost at home against Tennessee since 2003. You know, we lost last year against Tennessee, and Tennessee's 1-2 out of 3, which is weird because we won 15 straight. But this is now a rivalry again, and we always knew the rivalry was going to return. But Tennessee's got momentum in the rivalry, and now it's Alabama's job to put it back on their side. And I think they can beat it at home. This is a night game. Should be an electric atmosphere. I think that key will be, and this has not been kind of the last 3 games we haven't done this, but getting off to a fast start. We all know Tennessee's offense is very explosive. But I will say this. I think if I'm not mistaken, Tennessee is either 14th or 15th in the conference in rushing defense. And Arkansas ran for 240 yards.
Yeah, they sure did. They sure did. Arkansas's offense lit them up, yeah.
Even if Jim Miller doesn't play, now we don't know that. If he doesn't clear concussion protocol, I still think we can have success running the ball against Tennessee. Now, it would be nice if we had Jim Miller, if we can have Jim Miller back. But that's going to be key. You want to attack the weakness of Tennessee, which is their rushing defense, because that's going to set up the play-action pass and the receivers, because if we can get that downhill running game going, I think that will be really successful against Tennessee.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it, Corey. If you can run the football, man, it increases your chances of winning the game and helps out Ty. There's no doubt. Hey, great call as always, Corey. We're going to get to one more call here in this segment. Good to talk to you. Let's get to Joseph. Hey, Joseph.
What's up, man?
Hey, good morning.
What's up? Hey.
It's good. What's got on your mind?
Well, I ain't going to mind this word, Gary. On that last offensive drive, Alabama done good, and I'm proud of the win. You know, Debbie's always good. But on that last offensive drive, man, I think instead of running the football 3 times and punting, we should have tried something else, try to pick up that first down, at least on 3rd down. You know what I'm talking about? I don't have a problem running it on the first 2 downs, 1st and 2nd. But on that 3rd down, we needed to come up with something to try to pick up that 1st down, ice the game, go ahead and just take it on out, I think, because, man, you're playing a dangerous game when you do what we did there. I mean, because if they would have drove down the score, that would have looked real bad here.
Yeah, you make a good point, but I tell you this, Alabama won the football game, and I know that they would like to have gotten the first down, but they didn't want to turn it over, and they didn't want to stop the clock. So it worked out. They, you know, the defense did allow Missouri to score pretty quickly, which was disappointing. But after the touchdown, and then they allowed, you know, them to get in position to score again, but they got an interception to win the game, and they'll learn from it. Everybody's trying to get better, and so is Alabama. Hey, thank you, Joseph. Great phone call. It is 9:28, and a reminder that the $99 suit sale continues at T-Town Menswear and T-Town Gallery in the University Mall, home of the $99 suit sale. It's just that simple. Go to T-Town Menswear and get yourself hooked up with a beautiful $99 suit. Look like $1 million for just $99 at T-Town Menswear and T-Town Gallery in the University Mall. We're coming back with Rodney Orr next year on the Gary Harris Show.
Treatment options at up to 95% less than brand names at hims.com/radio. That's hims.com/radio. hims.com/radio.
Roll Tide, the best sports talk, period. Your home for Alabama sports. Tide 100.9 and streaming on the Tide 100.9 app.
Time for Rodney Orr from TiderInsider.com, Tider Insider TV, and also with me on the Inside the Trenches podcast featuring Wallace Gilberry and Andre Smith every Monday night at 7 o'clock, also right here on Tide 100.9 FM. Good morning, Rodney.
Good morning, Gary. How are you?
Doing well. Alabama gets it done again on the road, snapping Mizzou's home field winning streak after they snapped Georgia's. And now, because of Alabama's work, the Tide has the longest home winning streak in the country at 15 games. So they'll be trying to protect their home winning streak on Saturday night against Tennessee. But let's get to the game Saturday in Columbia. We thought it would be a tough game. It was. But Alabama found a way to get it done, 27-24, to get the 5-1 overall, and more importantly, 3-0 in the SEC.
Yeah, I mean, I think if you look around the SEC, I mean, you just got to find ways to win now. You know, it's not I know sometimes fans want to see perfection, but that's, you know, the way the balance is right now as you look at it, there's a lot of close games. I mean, a ton of close games. You look at Tennessee, the upcoming opponent, they barely escaped Arkansas on Saturday. So, you know, again, just a lot of close games. Alabama going on the road, gutting another one out, finding a way to win. And, you know, you got to tip your hat because there were some moments there where it looked, you know, a little bit like, you know, it could go the other way. And Alabama made plays when they had to make them. And I think, and Kalen DeBoer mentioned this, he talked about last year, Alabama didn't make the plays in the critical moments, but they did on Saturday. I mean, you know, Ty Simpson delivered a big, big-time throw, and it was a big, big-time catch by Lightyear Brooks. And then, you know, what happened there at the goal line with Daniel Hill. So Alabama made the plays, and Deshaun Lee, of course, you know, gets the interception to close the game out. So I thought overall, you know, considering it was on the road and Missouri has a really, really good defense, it was a good win.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And Ty continues to play well, 23-31. Not quite the yardage that he'd been throwing for, but 200 yards, but three touchdowns. And like you said, came up clutch. Had a bad fumble in the game to start off the third quarter, which let Missouri have a short field to tie the game up. But and maybe helped the ball on some occasions. I mean, let's be honest. I mean, he's still only had six starts. He's continuing to improve, and I think that, you know, maybe we've all, me included, gotten a little carried away. But he's still learning how to play the position, right? I mean, he's played really, really well. But that's the good thing is that Ty Simpson, I think his best football is still ahead of him.
Yeah, I mean, you're right. I mean, he did. He missed a couple of throws that he had. He was under a lot of duress. I mean, they were blitzing him. They were doing different things. And, you know, I spoke to a former NFL quarterback yesterday about it, and he was saying, you know, these defenses now are playing too high safety, which they're trying to take away Alabama's downfield passing attack. So Alabama's got to be able to run the ball a little better. They did do that to some extent on Saturday. Of course, unfortunately, Jam Miller went out. But – so, you know, to be able to run the ball effectively is going to be a real key, you know, take some of it off of Ty. But you're right. I mean, again, he held the ball a couple of times. He made some mistakes. And I think sometimes Ty maybe is trying to do too much because maybe he feels like he has to. I don't know. But, you know, hopefully he'll continue to, like you said, he'll continue to learn from those things.
Let's say with the offense, the Caden Proctor – story is incredible. Finding different ways to get him the ball. Three straight games now that he's touched the football, and he's made good plays in all three of them. He almost had a touchdown, got grabbed by the face mask. Unfortunately, Alabama wound up having to kick a field goal on that drive, and he's playing really well at left tackle. But this Caden Proctor story, now we go into every game, you know, wondering how Ryan Grubb is going to use him in the offense this time. You kind of get the impression that some point in the game now he's going to touch the football.
Yeah. He's getting a lot of notoriety for it. I mean, you know, offensive linemen generally don't get much notoriety and unless they make a mistake, as you know. Yeah, this is certainly adding to Caden Proctor's kind of the hype around him. And I'm just waiting to see if they're going to – if they have enough confidence to allow him to throw one, Gary, you think?
You know what? At this point, nothing would surprise me with Ryan Grubb and Caden Proctor. It really wouldn't surprise me. Let's stay with the offensive line. As you mentioned, they struggled at times in pass protection against a really good Missouri front. They've continued to rotate guys in. Jane Roberts got back in the rotation, played quite a bit at right guard. Wilkin Formby had a couple of occasions at right tackle where, you know, he had some issues. He's played some at guard. They worked Michael Carroll, the freshman, in. Offensive line-wise, playing seven or eight guys, I don't have a problem with it. Do you think at right tackle we might see more Michael Carroll with Wilkin Formby continuing in pass protection at times to have some issues?
You know, yeah, sometimes, again, I know Wilkin had one there where, you know, Ty got laid out pretty good. But, again, I don't know if he was supposed to have some help on one side or the other, on the inside or on the outside by the running back Daniel Hill in that particular play. And, you know, I saw Hill release. Again, I think that's a key that when you look at it with Jam Miller out, what are the running backs in terms of, you know, pass protection? You know, where do they – how good are they? I mean, because I think Jam does a pretty good job, although he had some moments in this game where he misjudged a couple of those blitzes too, picking up guys. So that's a real key, is the running backs helping out. But as far as the offensive line, you know, just again, just watching, I would think that I just get the feel that Wilkin is a little more comfortable on the inside than maybe on the outside. I think with Michael Carroll there at right tackle, he's done a really nice job when he's had the opportunities to play. So it'll be interesting. I think having a guy, though, like Wilkin that can play guard or tackle is just extremely valuable. So, you know, of course, Jaden Roberts did a nice job when he was in there. Vandermark's done a lot of contribution. You know, again, he starts at right guard. And I noticed William Sanders continues to get a lot of time at left guard, and apparently Pro Football Focus this game.
Defensively, a lot of good things in the game. Got a couple interceptions, could have had another one, knocked the ball out a couple of times. Unfortunately, not able to get on top of it, but, you know, making plays and did a lot of good things. But the opening drive of the game was incredibly disappointing. And Missouri got the football, and you defer to put your defense on the field first, and they go right down the field on you. I mean, with very little resistance, and you're down 7-0. Then after you go up 10, you kick the football, and the one thing you're thinking is, you know, even if they get down in scoring position, make them work. And again, they went right down the field and scored, and you had to hang on for dear life there at the end of the game. So a lot of good things are happening, but yet there's still just enough where they get gashed or give up enough big plays that you're still just, I don't think, comfortable saying that this is a great defense. So I want to point out the good and the positives. And at the same time, I mean, that opening drive and then the drive after you go up 10, you got to, as a defense, you just got to have a little more resistance, I think. I mean, at times, it's hard to figure out. They can be so almost dominant. And then at other times, they just give up ground way too easily.
Yeah. Yeah, the first drive, I mean, yeah, that was kind of a debacle. I mean, they didn't seem to be in position on any of those plays. And, you know, Damani Jackson was watching the ball and didn't realize where he was on the field, and he ran out of bounds when Norfleet caught the ball, the tight end for Missouri, and scored, put them up 7-0 in that first series. Just didn't play good defense at that point. I thought a real key to the game was on Alabama's next possession when Zion Young, number 9 from Missouri, the pass rusher, defensive end, he really didn't manage his emotions very well, got a personal foul, gave Alabama a first down instead of a 3rd and long, and then Alabama took advantage of it. So that was good to see the offense take advantage of that. But, yeah, I mean, the defense, again, I thought they played really well for the most part. I mean, when you hold Missouri, I really felt like, Gary, that if Alabama could hold Missouri to 175, between 150 and 175 rushing, that would be a good mark. And I know that sounds like a lot, but you're talking about a team that was averaging 292 coming in, one of the most potent rushing attacks in the country. And they held Missouri to 163. And Ahmad Hardy, who's a really good back, he had 12 carries for 52 yards. In fact, Pribula, the quarterback, was the leading rusher for them. They let him escape a couple of times. But so I thought defensively against the run, they did a really good job for the most part, to me. Now, Wallace is going to be on our, of course, the inside the trenches tonight, Wallace Gilberry, and he wasn't quite as impressed with the run defense, and we're going to find out why tonight. But I thought that, you know, given Missouri's potent running attack, that they played it pretty well.
Ron Neuer with us from TiderInsider.com, and we're talking Alabama-Mizzou. All right, Alabama, and you said it, I've said it, you know, finding a way to win games is what it's all about in this league. And Alabama's won two on the road, which is huge, particularly after last year, to get to 3-0. Now you come home for the third Saturday in October showdown against Tennessee after winning 15 in a row against the Vols under Nick Saban. Tennessee has broken through and won two of the last three, including last year in Knoxville. They bring an offense in here that is very, very potent. Defensively, speaking of issues, Arkansas ran the ball for well over 200 yards and had a lot of success and almost won that football game. But we're going to see the best version of Tennessee. You know that. I know that. What's your expectation for this matchup on Saturday night?
Yeah, and I, honestly, I need to look more at Tennessee, which I'll probably do today, you know, later on. But, you know, obviously Aguilar's had a lot of success throwing the ball. That's what they do. They're balanced. They do run it well. You mentioned they ran it extremely well against Arkansas. Of course, now Arkansas had one of the lowest-rated rush defenses in the country coming in. By the way, I think Arkansas rushed for a ton of yards in that game, too.
They did. That's what I said. They absolutely well over 200 yards in the game. Yeah,
Arkansas just kind of got them a little bit. So that would be interesting. It's going to be with Jam probably out, I assume. You know, he was had a concussion, so I'm going to guess it's likely that he won't be in this game. And then the Alabama run game, Kevin Riley. I thought Daniel Hill stepped up. We'll see. Does Richard Young get back in the mix? I haven't really seen him much in 2 weeks, so I don't know what's going on there. You wonder about the progress of A.K. Deere, because every time he's gotten in, you know, you see the vision, you see the speed, the explosive ability. Again, there's a lot of things that go into playing the position and get earning reps, so we'll see about that. But, you know, Alabama needs to get some rotation there at running back, and maybe they can exploit some of Tennessee defensively in terms of the run defense. But overall, Tennessee's defense, I know I talked to someone last night inside the building, Gary, and they said, look, you know, they're pretty good defensively. We're going to have to be better to have success. We're going to have balance, and we're going to have to be better, going to have to be able to block, to pass protect better than what we pass protected at Missouri.
And, again, it's the nature of football in this conference, but you've done such good work to this point. Kalen DeBoer is unbeaten in his Alabama career at home, so you feel good about any time you play a home game. But it will be a test, and the last thing you want to do is build up this record to get to 3-0 with two big road wins and come home and lose. It is a huge football game, whether it's Tennessee or regardless of who it is in the SEC. It's bigger because it's a rivalry game, but not giving back any ground, Rodney. We saw this team last year. Now it was on the road, but we would see them, you know, you think they're about to get on a roll and they would give it back. It makes this game even more important because of what you've done to this point, right? To come home Saturday night and get the win.
Yeah, I think the one thing that's more promising right now is you're just seeing how they're gutting these games out. I mean, extremely competitive. They're facing adverse situations, circumstances. They're overcoming them. That's one thing that, you know, just a big difference from last year. And as DeBoer said, making the plays at critical moments, that's part of it. So, I mean, yes, I do think this too, Gary. They played what? They played, since they've come off the bye week, they played Georgia, they played Vanderbilt and Missouri. Those are three of the better teams in the SEC. They've won all three of those games. And again, somebody was pointing out, well, they haven't scored a lot of points. I think if you look at the SEC games, and I haven't really gotten down to it and looked at it very closely, but just on the surface, you look at a lot of these games in the SEC. They're going to be 3-point games, and a lot of them are going to be lower scoring than maybe what some people thought. You know, there's been some real defensive struggles in these games. So that's been something that's really interesting. But Alabama's answered. And I think that's the real key is where we are right now. And some people are saying, well, you know, you played those three tough games. You're going to be tired. You're going to be – listen, they had an off week before Georgia. You know, you go through these gauntlets in the SEC. Every team goes through these gauntlets. So it's never easy. And I don't think being tired, quote unquote, is a real excuse. And you know, I think that you look at the way Alabama's possessed the football. That was another key in this game, Gary. I think if you look at the time of possession, what Alabama did, Missouri came in like one of the top time of possession teams in the country. They were averaging over 37 minutes a game. They had it, what, maybe 21 something in this game. Alabama had it over around 38. So they did the same thing against Vanderbilt. It's really impressive. I think it's going to be another key in this upcoming game. And when I say that, I say this. When you possess the football and you have that kind of discrepancy, 16, 17 minutes time of possession advantage in some of these games, the next week, I mean, your defense is rested. And when I say rested, I mean, you know, they've only played 20, 22 minutes a game. And that's a real key.
It really is. Yeah, your possession time, Alabama, 38 minutes, 33 seconds. Mizzou, 21-27 in the last game. Hey, I want to change topics just for a minute, Rod, and get your reaction, although it's it ties into college football. We've seen a lot of in-season firings. Two more yesterday, James Franklin, a high-profile program with a $49 million buyout out at Penn State, despite last year, you know, getting into the playoff and making a run. And then at a lower level of football, Trent Dilfer out at UAB, not near the buyout, but still. And Alex Mortensen's got a chance to be the interim coach there. But whether you're a high-profile program like Penn State or a lower-profile program like UAB, and maybe it's because of the portal, but if you don't coach well, you're apt to get fired before even halfway through the season. We've seen, and of course, the other firings already this year. What does that say about the game and where we're at now with college football? Used to, even if you were a bad team, coaches usually would survive the season, Rodney, but not anymore.
Well, you know, I don't know. I don't like that trend at all, but I know that, you know, recruiting, like you said, the NIL, the portal, all of these things come into play, you know, and when there's a lot of speculation around a coach, you know, maybe it can have a negative impact on the future in terms of recruiting and the things that, you know, you're trying to do. But I don't like the trend. What if James Franklin, and I'm, again, I'm saying what if, I know Drew Allar was hurt, the quarterback got injured in this game. I guess he's out for the season for Penn State. But, you know, what if they turned it around and they won the rest of their games? And again, it may not be likely, but you don't know that. And what if they did get in as a playoff team with three losses? Because there is a possibility that could happen. I just don't like this, you know, firing, the trend that's going on right now with these coaches in the middle of the year. I think you ought to be able to finish out the year and then the decisions are made then, but that's not going to happen anymore.
Yeah, I don't like it either. All right, great segment as always, Rod. I'll talk with you tonight. See you for the Inside the Trenches podcast. And, of course, tomorrow night for Tider Insider TV and TiderInsider.com. It's, boy, it's always buzzy.
It really is. TiderInsider.com. It's only $48 a year.
Thanks, Rod.
Okay, buddy. Take care.
All right, 9:51. We'll be back with more of the Gary Harris Show. We'll wrap up hour number one right after this.
On The Game with Ryan Fowler.
Coming up on the Monday edition of The Game, we'll do the good, the bad, and the ugly from Alabama's game against the Missouri Tigers. We'll do that starting at 2 p.m. We'll talk to Drew DeArmond. We'll talk to Martin Houston. And we'll take your phone calls on The Game with Ryan Fowler on Tide 100.9, 1230 WTBC, your home of Alabama Crimson Tide Sport.
The longest-running sports program.
988. Get to Mercedes-Benz of Tuscaloosa before your friends do. On select models with approved credit while supplies last. Stock number L2395. Tax and fees extra. See dealer for details.
Since 2011, Billy's Sports Grill, located on Main Avenue in historic downtown Northport, has been serving their legendary signature chicken sandwich, award-winning wings, and handcrafted cocktails. Billy's is also the spot to watch all your favorite sporting events with big screen, high definition televisions, both dining rooms, at the bar, and outside.
Generators. True South Generators. Online at TrueSouthGenerators.com. That's TrueSouthGenerators.com.
95.3 The Bear and Sports Radio Tide 100.9 and 1230 AM WTBC are partnering with Baumhauer's Victory Grill this season to put you in the best seats in the house at Bryant-Denny Stadium. Sign up online at 95.3thebear.com, on the app, or the Tide 100.9 app. Each week, we'll pick a winner for a pair of tickets to an Alabama home football game. Baumhauer's Victory Grill, with two locations in Tuscaloosa, Harper Lee Drive and Baumhauer South on Courtney Drive. Let Baumhauer's Victory Grill put you in the best seats in the house. With 95.3 The Bear and Sports Radio Tide 100.9 and 1230 AM WTBC. Your flagship home of Alabama sports. We are a championship school, and school is in session.
Makes a catch, makes them bang into each other, stays on his feet, breaks a tackle, scores, scores, scores.
Join us Saturday as the Crimson Tide head to the zoo to battle the Missouri Tigers. Our coverage begins at 8 a.m. on your home for Alabama football. Alabama football is presented by Pearl River Resort in Choctaw, Mississippi, DCH Regional Medical Center, Tuscaloosa Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram, Two Dimes, Taco Casa, Mercedes-Benz of Tuscaloosa, Mary's Travel Center, Catfish Heaven, Tuscaloosa County Sheriff's Department, Hudson Pool Fine Jewelers, and Townsend Honda. Tide 100.9, Tuscaloosa weather.
Dry weather continues through the week. The sky's sunny today, the high 82. Clear tonight with a low at 57. For tomorrow and Wednesday, a good supply of sunshine both days with warm afternoons. Highs between 82 and 85. I'm James Spann with the Alabama Weather Network on Tide 100.9. It's 62 degrees in Tuscaloosa.
You're listening to The Gary Harris Show.
Oh,
and streaming on the Tide 100.9 app.
All right, 9:57. We're going to wrap it up for the first hour of the Gary Harris Show. It's been brought to you by Alabama Credit Union, member-owned and not-for-profit. It's just a better way of banking. Hour number two is on the way. We're going to add in a bonus guest, our baseball analyst, the former Alabama standout, now does work for SEC Network and the Crimson Tide Sports Network. David Kindred is going to jump on with us at 10 to talk about the Major League Baseball playoffs. The American League and National League Championship Series are ready to go, and we'll talk with David about that. We'll still try to get Kalen DeBoer audio, take more of your phone calls, and also Casey Smith on golf. All that's coming up in the second hour of the Gary Harris Show on Tide 100.9 FM and 1230 AM WCBC. Your home.
Stephen Mezrano, Alabama Injury Lawyers. Mez wins.
It's time to win some cash on Tide 100.9 and 1230 WTBC. W265CG Tuscaloosa. Here's this hour's cash code.
The code is 169. The code again is 169. That's 169.
Enter that code on the Tide 100.9 app for your chance to win $1,000. Two special winners will win $10,000.
From the Fox Sports Studios in Los Angeles, here's Chris Perfect.
Mariners took Game 1 of the American League Championship Series, coming off the bat of Jorge Polanco, driving in two runs. Cal Raleigh had a home run. Six innings of dominance from pitcher Bryce Miller. Dodgers and Brewers are starting the NLCS on Monday. Dodgers manager Dave Roberts told the media Blake Snell will get the start on the bump for L.A. Sunday Night Football, the Lions fall to the Kansas City Chiefs 30-17. After the game, tensions boiling over as Lions safety Brian Branch starting a fight with Juju Smith-Schuster, the wide receiver for Kansas City. Puka Nacua, who leads the NFL this year in catches, suffered an ankle sprain on Sunday, according to lead sources. This could potentially lead to him missing some time. 49ers have lost linebacker Fred Warner to a season-ending.
Affordable treatment options at up to 95% less than brand names at hims.com/radio. That's hims.com/radio. HIMS.com/RADIO.
The Gary Harris Show. UCM host Tider Insider TV. Crimson Tide kickoff. Play-by-play for Alabama sports and sports director for WVUA 23. It's time for the Gary Harris Show on your home for Alabama sports. Tide 100.9 and streaming on the Tide 100.9 app.
All right, here we go. Hour number two of the Gary Harris Show is on the air. We've been talking plenty of college football. And, of course, it's the third Saturday in October matchup between Alabama and Tennessee coming up on Saturday evening at Saban Field and Bryant-Denny Stadium. But we're going to break away from the football discussion for just a moment. David Kindred, our baseball analyst, is going to join us, of course, former Alabama and Ole Miss player, and now does television work for the SEC Network and for the Crimson Tide Sports Network. And we're going to talk a little AL and NL championship series. Good morning, David. How are you?
Gary, good morning. Glad to be on this morning. A little October baseball, sweater weather. Talk a little postseason MLB baseball.
Yeah, we're finally getting to it now with the wild card round and then with the divisional series. It's been pushed back. The World Series doesn't end until November. But we're to the championship series. And listen, you know, the TV networks love that the Dodgers are in. I know they were pulling for the Yankees. I would have loved to have had another Dodgers-Yankees World Series. And then would have liked to have seen the Cubs, I'm sure, advance in the NLCS, but the Brewers took care of that. But we've got some intriguing matchups. And let's start with, since the Mariners are, and Blue Jays are already underway, let's start with what happened with the Mariners on Friday night against the Tigers. History was made, the longest postseason game ever, and Seattle pulled that out over Detroit and then had to turn around, fly to Toronto, and play last night and was able to get that win to go up 1-0 on the Blue Jays. How impressed are you by Seattle finishing off that game against the Tigers, which went on for, what, 5 hours, and then able to fly to Toronto and pick up the very important game one win over the Blue Jays in the ALCS?
Yeah, it's definitely riding the hot hand. And in postseason baseball, I'm glad you bring up the operational aspect of, hey, you win a game and then you're flying out and then you're playing the Blue Jays at Century Field, which that is a home field advantage absolutely for the Blue Jays. But like you said, some new parity in baseball. The Mariners, as you said, they have never reached the World Series. They've got that on the cusp for them. And also the Blue Jays haven't been since they won it back in the early 90s and 90, I believe 92, 93. And also on the other side, on the National League side, the Brewers have not been there since 82. So you got a lot of new faces, and yeah, let's break down the Mariners and the Blue Jays. Again, great start by both pitchers. Two SEC guys, Kevin Gausman, LSU guy, actually played against him. He was a freshman my senior year. Tremendous pitcher with a phenomenal splitter and fastball. Had a great start. And it just, you know, for him, is a great start. And Cal Raleigh, who's been just the offensive prowess, really got on one splitter and cut the game wide open. And just slowly the Mariners were able to put the game away, and should be another great start. But again, great parity in this postseason baseball.
Yeah, when you look at Seattle, like you said, never having been to a World Series and had a year where I think they won, heck, I can't remember, 111, 112 games. Ken Griffey Jr. was there, and they didn't make it. But they've got a player in Cal Raleigh that their catcher, who's hit more home runs than any catcher in the history of baseball. But watching him work behind the plate, too, his ability to throw out runners, to handle a pitching staff, this isn't just a guy that goes up there and hits home runs, and you got to worry about him being a liability behind the plate. He's an all-around catcher. What a stud this guy is.
He really is. He's a dominating threat at the plate, but also commands the pitching staff. And it's one of those guys where, hey, regardless of lefty-righty matchup, he's hitting every bit of it. 60 home runs in regular season and delivers a big home run for him last night to kind of get the game within reach. You know, Bryce Miller was pitching a great game for the Mariners as well. Another SEC guy, Texas A&M pitcher. So a lot of good SEC faces, but again, Seattle Mariners get up one in a big-time win, as you said, on short rest. But going, you know, you're playing at the Blue Jays, Century Field. So hopefully, you know, if they continue to play, then they get the back end playing at home in Seattle.
And for the Blue Jays, we saw what they did to the Yankees. That lineup is potent. Vlad Guerrero Jr., man, just mashes the baseball. I'm really surprised, to be honest with you, that they didn't take game one, sitting there waiting on Seattle to come in. Now they're behind the eight ball a little bit. You give up home field in the first game, but it is a best of seven, so a lot of baseball left. But what this Toronto team has been able to do this year to win the division, you know, they almost let it slip away there at the end, but to get home field throughout the playoffs, this is a really strong offensive ball club. Would you give what do you think of their pitching staff? Is their pitching staff their liability, or is it good enough, you think, to get them to the World Series?
They're good enough to hold up, and their bullpen has been pretty good. I think that you offensively Guerrero has to get going, and I think you've also lost Bichette. He's out for a series, still lingering injury, but the bullpen can hold up. It's just one of those things where. In a best of seven series, you saw where you got to save every arm you can. And in one of those cases where, hey, if you're not going to, you've got to save your arms for a best of seven. So I do think that their bullpen can hold up, but you feel like the advantage is right now with the Mariners, but I know the odds are still on the Blue Jays.
David Kindred with us breaking down the American League and National League Championship Series. You're right. Seattle's already taken game one. But still a lot of baseball left. Who do you like in the ALCS?
I'll be honest with you. I'm going to ride the hot hand, like you said. I'm going to stick with the Mariners. They got one on the road, and you play one more and then go to the house. And if they can keep the offense going, or Rosarena. Mariners have a lot of different ways offensively to win games. You talked about Cal Raleigh, big bopper in their bat. But they can move the ball, and they can steal bases and put a lot of pressure on the Blue Jays. So I'm gonna go with the outsider pick. I'm going to go with the Mariners to get their first opportunity to get to the World Series.
All right, let's get to the National League. The Dodgers, the defending world champions. We know the payroll. We know the star power that they have. I think they are the most talented team left. And then you've got Milwaukee, the average Joes. I think that, again, a lot of people that aren't Milwaukee Brewers fans would have rather seen the Cubs and the Dodgers, but the Brewers do what they do, and that is they play some old-school baseball. They can hit some home runs. I'm not going to say that they don't, but they'll single you and nickel and dime you to death, man. They will string hits together. They're a good defensive club, well-rounded staff pitching-wise, just a hard team to beat because they can do everything well. And, again, the Dodgers, like we said, they're going to bring the star power to this series. How do you see the NLCS?
Yeah, it's absolutely going to be a good game starting tonight. You've got Blake Snell, left-handed pitcher for the Dodgers, who's been just the workhorse for them going, and they're going, and the Brewers are going to throw out Quinn Priester. And again, you touched on it. Dodgers' largest payroll in baseball. They've been to the World Series three out of the last six times. Probably the best overall team money can buy, but. I read somewhere where they are over the luxury tax. The Dodgers are $160 million over, and that's more than the entire roster payroll for the Brewers. So that just kind of tells you what kind of money is on the table, and it's a different. The Brewers probably the lowest revenue small market team. So they had a great series against the Cubs, but I think for the Dodgers, it's all going to come down to can Shohei Ohtani, can he get his bat going again, because he's been scuffling as of late. Their catcher, Will Smith, has been scuffling. So can the Dodgers get the bats going? Because the bullpen for the Dodgers is one of their strengths. If they can get a starter going four or five innings and somehow have a one- or two-run lead, you got to tip your cap to the bullpen all day. But I still like the Dodgers, probably the best team on paper.
All right. So if you're going Dodgers and Mariners, and, of course, again, we'll see how it plays out. But who is your World Series pick at this point?
I'm going to go with Cinderella, Gary. I'm going to keep rolling. If I'm going to go with Mariners making it for the first time in College World Series, I'm going to go with the Cinderella team. Give me the Mariners if they can get past the Blue Jays. But four great teams in this postseason baseball. Make sure y'all check it out. I know we're in football season, but this is just fun time to watch pro baseball.
Oh, no doubt. Even if like you said, if you don't watch a lot of regular season baseball, the postseason, like I said, what we saw Friday night in Seattle was theater, man. That was unbelievable. All right, David, third Saturday in October matchup coming up on Saturday night between Alabama and Tennessee. Can't get you on or anybody on and not ask about that game. What's your thoughts on Alabama and Tennessee?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of for Alabama getting a win against Missouri and going through the last three games for them in October. It's been pretty tough. And to get a good win against Vanderbilt, stack that on Missouri, and then you got to turn around. Fortunately, you're at the house. Tennessee scuffled a little bit, but that could have been a little bit of looking forward and preparation for this third Saturday in October. But I do think that Ty Simpson, not happy about his performance, but I do think that he has got to be the Heisman contention. He's been consistent, and you can start to see the leadership role. I think it'll be tough to see, if Jam Miller is going to be back on injury. But I like the Tide to win this one by a touchdown. You got to give them the call at the house.
And lastly, fall baseball for Alabama is underway for all these ball clubs. It's an important time to build your team. Alabama's taking steps in the right direction. Of course, we know still trying to get to that level in this conference where you can, you can be elite, and it's hard with so many teams that are already there. But Rob Vaughn and company seem to be on the right track. What's your expectation for Alabama baseball in 2026?
I do think that you'll have an opportunity, like you said, some exhibition baseball. If you're coming into town to watch the football game on Saturday, go to the baseball field on Friday night. They're hosting an exhibition against Lipscomb. They've got a lot of new talent, transfer portal guys that have got 10-plus home runs from other schools and some arms that they had from last year. So I do expect them to take a next step, go deeper into playoff baseball. I do think Rob Vaughn's the answer for this Alabama baseball squad. I think he's assembling some strong group. But, again, Lipscomb on Friday night, and then they go on the road to play Clemson the next weekend to play a very good exhibition series.
All right, David Kindred breaking it down for us. Thank you, David.
Guys, appreciate you having me on.
All right, buddy. 10:14 here on the Gary Harris Show. The YMCA of Tuscaloosa is ready for you when you're ready for the Y. The downtown branch, 2313th Street. Man, I tell you what a great facility, what great people, great personal training, everything you need. The only thing that's missing is you. The Y is ready for you when you're ready for the Y. All right, we're going to come back, and phone lines are open on the Gary Harris Show hotline at 205-342-9904. We'll also try to get some of that Kalen DeBoer audio, his post-game press conference from Columbia on Saturday afternoon. We'll be back after this.
Alabama real-time news update from the Tuscaloosa Thread Newsroom.
Here are the TuscaloosaThread.com headlines brought to you by Mercedes-Benz of Tuscaloosa. TPD Captain Kip Hart released on $5,000 bond early this morning after being charged with domestic violence strangulation Sunday morning. That's a Class B felony. Alabama Senior Republican Senator Tommy Tuberville giving President Trump all the credit for Hamas's release of the remaining Israeli hostages.
President Trump moves in. He tells them, you got hell to pay if you don't get them out.
Tuberville claims Trump is making our enemies fear us. In sports, Alabama football up to number 6 this week in the AP College Football Poll. The Tide plays 11th-ranked Tennessee Saturday. Don't buy your new or pre-owned Mercedes-Benz from anywhere other than Mercedes-Benz of Tuscaloosa. Our local team provides a 5-star buying experience and 5-star service. Over 100 new vehicles and
that to them each and every time they come and visit us.
The sense of pride that we have in the quality, the consistency of our food carries over to everything we do in the stores. That's Taco Gossip.
Life doesn't wait for when your finances are in perfect order. It just happens. But no matter what surprises come your way, Alabama Credit Union will be here to help make it affordable with great personal loans, mortgages, and auto loans. They offer an easy application process and fast decisions so you can stay focused on feeling good about whatever life brings your way. Alabama Credit Union will be here to help make it affordable with great personal loans, mortgages.
Save up to 50% on your Babbel subscription when you sign up at Babbel.com. That's Babbel.com to save up to 50%. BABBEL.com.
Tide 100.9, Tuscaloosa weather.
Dry weather continues through the week. The sky's sunny today, the high 82. Clear tonight with a low at 57. For tomorrow and Wednesday, a good supply of sunshine both days with warm afternoons. Highs between 82 and 85. I'm James Spann with the Alabama Weather Network on Tide 100.9. It's 62 degrees in Tuscaloosa.
Where the season never ends. This is your home of Alabama sports. Tide 100.9 and streaming on the Tide 100.9 app.
All right, 10:20. Welcome back into the Gary Harris Show. We're going to jump back out on the hotline and welcome in the Sheriff, Tom. Hey, Tom, good morning.
Gary, how are you?
Doing well.
You know, Missouri, if you don't mind, I want to go back and rehash that a little bit.
Okay.
They had a week off, and I think they threw some things as far as their defensive front and some of the plays they ran kind of had us a little bit on the confused side with our blocking scheme. And I think that they were good enough. They had enough talent to kind of make that strategy stick. You know what I mean? And I think that's why they were able to get Ty off his mark and get him a little bit uncomfortable. But I still thought he performed well under the amount of duress that he was getting from that front.
Yeah, I don't think there's any doubt about it. I mean, he's a clutch player. The moment's not too big for him. He can make plays when the game's on the line, and that's what you want from a quarterback. You know, a lot of quarterbacks I've seen, we've talked about it, you know, first three quarters of the game, they're playmakers. But when the game is on the line, they tighten up. And that doesn't seem to be the case for Ty. He can make the plays that you need your quarterback to make to win games. And I'm with you. I don't think he had his fastball on Saturday. That was not his best game. But he persevered. And that fourth and eight throw that he made to Brooks was a thing of beauty. I mean, you couldn't have – I mean, it was perfect throw. And then the fourth and goal throw to Daniel Hill with a little bit of pressure. You know, the free rusher came. And he got it over his head and got it to Daniel Hill to win the football game. So, clutch player. Yeah, he's a clutch quarterback.
Well, I wasn't particularly happy. I'm not saying it was bad. Don't get me wrong. I think Missouri had a lot to do with what was successful and what was not. They were playing their rear ends off, and I thought they had a pretty effective scheme on defense. For what Alabama does on offense. Now, they got a couple of breaks, the fumble and such as that, but I wanted to bring this up. I thought they could have went to a better play call for Ty in that game because of the stunts that they were running up front on defense was causing Ty to have to hold the ball a little bit more, but and he was holding it because of the routes that we were running and the play that was called. I think they should have had more screens and relief valve type plays and all that. I think they should have had more of that in play. And I think that the plays that we were calling were taking a little bit too long to develop. That's why they were able to pressure like they did.
You could be right. I know this. These coaches evaluate everything that they do. They'll evaluate that game. I'm sure the coaches have already broken the film down. It's already been evaluated. And they'll look at both the positives and the negatives. And when they put together game plans in the future based on, of course, the opponent, but also what they've done in the past, if there's anything that they could have done better from that game, I'm sure they'll learn from it. So in the meantime, you know, they found a way to win. And that's most important. And if you can find a way to win and not have your best stuff, that's huge. And I agree with you. I don't think that was Alabama's best performance, but they got a big road W.
They sure did, and I can't disagree with any of those points. I think they're all good points. And And I like the one you made that you pointed out the throw that he made to Brooks on fourth and eight. The accuracy that Ty is displaying this year is just off the chart to me. He's so blame accurate that it ain't even funny. And I can't remember. I mean, Tua was pretty accurate, but I think Ty is probably the most accurate we've had in a while. But let me ask you this, and then I'm going to get out of the way, let somebody else in. I'm disappointed that the Tennessee game, I was talking to Phillip this morning, I'm disappointed that the Tennessee game is at night. You know, we got these October blue skies going, these cobalt blue skies and nice temperature, beautiful sunshine. Boy, it just looks like it's tailor-made for an afternoon Alabama-Tennessee game, don't you think?
Well, probably so, but, you know, it is what it is. TV dictates all of that, and I will say this. The flip side is people get to tailgate all day, enjoy those blue skies, and have a great day on campus, and then go to the game that night. So, yeah, I think the 2:30 time slot would have been perfect for this game. But I don't mind a night game because it's not going to be, you know, very cold and have all day to build up, and it'll be electric in there. I will say that. So, I don't disagree with you. At the same time, I don't mind the nighttime kick.
Gotcha. See you.
Thank you, Tom. Appreciate that. It is 10:20. 5 year on the Gary Harris Show, and we got Casey Smith on golf coming up in the next segment. And then we're going to try in the final segment to get to the Kalen DeBoer audio from Saturday if we can. Also, he's got his press conference coming up today at noon. The coordinator's at 11:30. So Monday's big days over at the Alabama football complex for the upcoming game, and they'll be previewing Tennessee today. So we'll look forward to that. And of course, Ryan Fowler will have a lot of that audio for you coming up today on the game at 2:00. NFL, Bama in the NFL, always important, always fun. Mac Jones picks up his first loss as a starter for the 49ers yesterday as they lose at Tampa Bay. Bryce Young leads the Cowboys, leads the Panthers to win over the Cowboys. Thought Tua played pretty well, but another heartbreaking loss for the Dolphins against the Chiefs. Of course, Jalen Hurts and the Eagles lost on Thursday night. As we track those Bama quarterbacks, and also last night, a big game in the NFL. The Chiefs took care of the Lions. As good as the Lions can look, and when they play inferior competition, they can look really good. When they play the top teams, you know, it's like everybody. It's not, you know, they don't look the same. They didn't look the same against the Packers. Last night, their offense got hung up against the Kansas City Chiefs, and that's a challenge for the Lions. They can embarrass inferior teams, but just like last year, they weren't able to make it to the Super Bowl. Can they play with the top teams? That's going to be the question for them. All right, it's time to get to the break. So we come back with Casey Smith on golf. I mentioned it with Rodney Orr, James Franklin out at Penn State, Trent Dilfer out at UAB, as we continue to see the trend of these in-season coaching firings in college football. We're going to come back with Casey Smith on golf next year on Tide 100.9 FM and 1230 AM WTBC, your home for Alabama sports.
Private Barrels. Then enjoy your victory cigar from R&R Cigars after Bama beats the Vols. R&R Cigars, 2703 Gary Fitz Street, Tuscaloosa.
Covering University of Alabama sports, as well as the national and local scene as well. The Gary Harris Show, only on Tide 100.9 and streaming on the Tide 100.9 app.
All right, 10:31. Welcome back into the Gary Harris Show. It's time for Casey Smith on golf, and we got a lot to cover this morning on the program. How are you, Casey?
I'm doing good, Gary. Hope you're well.
Outstanding. Let's start with Xander Schauffele, because he wins the Bay Current Classic by a shot of a Greiserman, who almost pulled it out for eagle on 18.
Came.
He was about 10 inches of forcing a playoff. But, again, Schauffele's an elite player, but an example of how tough it is to win on tour. It had been a while. He hadn't won since his win at the Open Championship, but he breaks through and gets that victory by one shot over Mike Greiserman, and nice win for Xander.
Yeah, I mean, now in the last 7 weeks, he's become a father type for being the top U.S. points scorer at the Ryder Cup and won a PGA Tour event. Securing his first victory this year, the Bay Current Classic in Yokohama, Japan, and he finished out strong. You know, he shot 71, 63, 67, 64. That 64 was great to edge out Max Greizerman, like you said, by one shot, who almost holed out. Greizerman takes the title of probably best player who hasn't had a win. But Xander's 31. His grandparents are from Japan. His 81-year-old grandmother was able to walk the whole 18 holes with him yesterday. Marked his 10th career win in 200 starts. Earlier this year, you know, he was sidelined with a rib injury. And, he's played in 200 events. 10 wins, 34 top threes, 69 top tens, 132 top 25s, only 23 missed cuts, $62.1 million earned on the golf course. I'd say Xander Schauffele is having a great career.
Yeah, no doubt about it. He's an elite player. News on Tiger Woods, Casey, another back surgery. And he's such a competitor and such a gamer. But this puts into question, again, what his playing future is going to look like. Whether he's going to try to have a playing career on the Champions Tour, still play the regular tour, be a Ryder Cup captain. What's golf-wise, what do you think's in the future for Tiger Woods, and is it all dependent on how his back responds?
Yeah, I think it's probably dependent upon how his back responds. You know, you think at some point maybe he gets all the way well. What's caused all this breakdown of his body? Wish him the best, because I really think the Champions Tour sort of fate depends upon him a little bit. If they were betting on him to play on that tour, I think he was wanting to play on that tour. And if he plays on that tour, you're going to get a lot of other guys to play because the checks are going to go up, you know. And I think if he doesn't play, what's going to happen next for that tour? That tour, not that it's, you know, all the pressure on him for that. He's done enough for golf, but it is true. That tour has not had the interest, even though they're getting some of the guys to play out there. But it's really he's the needle. And they don't have a lot of viewership. They don't have a lot of fan support. Something like that goes in there. It gets a lot more players playing. But I know if he gets well, he's going to try to play. He's a competitor. And he knows he can win out there if he's playing in a golf cart. I think it's just getting well and what his body will respond to. And, you know, he's obviously on a bunch of tour boards. He's still very involved in that. He can be the Ryder Cup captain anytime he's ready to be. And so if that doesn't happen, then he can be the Ryder Cup captain. And I would say there's one little thing out there that could, you know, swing it that way. I mean, there are really a lot of chips in play of this. Of if he plays in the Ryder, if he plays in the Champions Tour, a lot of those guys who went to live that are the older guys, they're all going to come back and play too. And so it's probably swings upon 20 players that would change the dynamic of the Champions Tour, all based on Tiger Woods' health. So wish him the best. He's always been, you know, was a couple years older than me and someone I followed so closely. I've probably read 20 of the books. And, you know, he's slated to have a team coming up in the TGL. He played last year some. Obviously not going to be able to play this year at this stage, but he's involved in that league. So we'll see what happens there and see him walking around. See if maybe it's a successful shorter surgery. But if you go in years past, if he's having surgery in October, the earliest we probably would see him would be at the Masters. And I know that's something that's always been circled on his calendar to try to play and play again. So will we ever see him in another Masters? I don't know. I was just hoping to see him in a golf cart on the Champions Tour 12 to 15 times a year, because if he ever gets out there, he's going to be playing to win. He's not playing as a ceremonial person. And if he plays to win, you know you're going to get that needle. You know you're going to get those fist pumps. You know you're going to get a good Tiger Woods. And it's just, man, that body of his is really broken down.
Visiting with Casey Smith on golf, and there is a lot to cover this morning, as I said. Let's get to the Korn Ferry Tour. Their graduates moving on to the PGA Tour. We have seen before, whether it's from college golf or Korn Ferry, guys come onto the tour ready to win. And when you look at these 2025 tour graduates, who are some names to watch? Guys that we may not know now, but we'll find out very quickly about on the PGA Tour next year.
Yeah, I mean, we had a couple of guys. I'll even start with who didn't make it before I get there. We had a couple of guys. Davis Shore finished 39th. Robbie Shelton finished 40th. Will Cannon from Birmingham finished 79th. The top 20 players get their tour cards. The past few years, they haven't really made it as easy for the guys getting the tour cards. They all go get a lot of starts. But that is going to change going into this year a little bit. So these guys should get actually a few more starts. You know, I think Neil Shipley is the name. It's a household name. He's been played at golf at Ohio State, longer-haired guy. You know, he's a member at Oakmont. We saw him at Oakmont in the U.S. Open. I think it's a name you're going to see. Johnny Kiefer was the number one on the points list, and he had a really big year. But Neil Shipley, I think, is someone that you'll hear. Hank Labota's been in and out of there some. You know, Pearson Coody played a golf at Texas. He was 12th. It's another name I think you're going to see. And then you got some guys that are from the Asian guys that are going to be some names. I think Jeffrey Kang is someone else you'll see. And I think those are really the main names. And then behind that, you know, Justin So, someone that finished 24th, that had to hurt. And Mitchell Mesnier finished 21st. I mean, those guys are back on the Korn Ferry Tour. Logan McAllister was a big name. He didn't finish in there. Kyle Westmoreland. So there's a lot of guys that finished in that pack. And Robbie Shelton at one point was trending to get his, and he didn't get his, and neither did David Shore. They've locked up Korn Ferry status. I saw Michael Johnson, too, from Birmingham. Great guy that played at Auburn. He also finished 48. They locked up. They all locked up their status for next year. On the Korn Ferry Tour, so they got a place to play. Korn Ferry checks are going to continue to get bigger, and they'll be and actually, I just saw Wilson Furr actually finished in the top 75, so he gets a Korn Ferry Tour card for next year. And Blades Brown is the up-and-coming teenage phenom name. He actually finished inside the top 75, and he turned pro out of high school. He works with Justin Parsons. I think you'll see him really have a big year, and he'll be someone that we'll see on the PGA Tour sooner than later. It's sort of the JT had to go to the Korn Ferry route. Jordan Spieth, they were short-lived on the Korn Ferry route. I think Blaze Brown, he skipped college, but I think that's somebody you'll see out there. He can really play golf.
Visiting with Casey Smith, talking about the great game of golf. As we get ready to turn the calendar to the 2026 here and wind it down. And I want to ask you about Nick Dunlap, because just really has hit a tough stretch. And now, even though he's a two-time tour winner, and one of those is an amateur, one of those is as a PGA touring pro, we know how status can, it goes away quickly if you're not competitive. And I know he's fine for this year coming up, but how big a season is this 2026 season going to be for Nick Dunlap, for his career, to try to get things back on track and to, you know, fulfill the awesome talent potential that he has?
I mean, this is it. You know, it's you've got your schedule set. Your back's against the wall. You've got to come out and have a really phenomenal year. He did not qualify for all of the signature events. He has qualified for all so far. He's qualified for all the events, just not signature. So even tougher for him, he's got to go out and have a really, really big year. And this offseason, truthfully, I would expect to see him. I say offseason. You got a couple-week break till you get to the end. I would expect to see him play some of the end-of-the-season events. I would hope so. So I think our first step is let's see where he shows up next. There's four events to end the year. Hopefully he shows up in some of those events and creates some momentum. Because he can still up his status by finishing really well in those events. And that should catapult him in the next year of where he's really, I mean, calendar year 26, he's going to have to go have a really good year. And talent's there to do it. But you're going to have to go out there and finish inside that top 70 and be secure for another year. But, you know, I would think Nick Dunlap, given his resume, is thinking, I want to get back in the winner's circle. I want to get back into competing to win and not just making cuts and, you know, get out of this fighting this driver. So between now and the end of this year, he really, you know, I hope that we see him playing some more golf before the end of the year. And then we start seeing, like we saw in that last tournament he played in, getting rid of that big miss, which really caused him all the trouble. And that's just a yip. I mean, it's a mental thing. It's not once I realized it's not physical, he's not limited physically, they just got to get him right mentally, get his confidence back, get to swing free, because we've seen it. I mean, he won the U.S. Amateur. He's won two times on tour. He won running away in college. He's won at every level. And hopefully we get that Nick Dunlap back, because you and I have talked on this show about him being, you know, there's only a few players that have won like he's won statistically. And so he's in a group of elite, the best players that ever played the game and some of the stuff that he's accomplished.
All right, Casey, I want to ask you about the big picture for golf. We've had so many LIV PGA Tour discussions since the LIV Tour began, and I know at one time you were pretty confident that it was all going to come back together. Now it seems like we've kind of fallen into a little bit of a routine that this is the way it is. We'll see players come together for Ryder Cup and President Cup's events. We'll see some of the majors where we have, but the two tours are separate, and it every indication is that they're going to be separate for 2026.
Yeah, I mean, we were pointing towards that. I know we've talked about that a lot. I thought that maybe with the new, I mean, it was headed that way, and then it stalled out. And I mean, look, they made announcements that they were going to have some framework agreement. They're still trying to poach some talent away. I don't know if you saw some of that last week that broke out, and they're going after, looks like, you know, Aldrich Pottgeter, who's had a great start to his career, mm-hmm. and potentially Minwoo Lee, they're trying to get over, plus a couple of these guys coming out of college. But yesterday, Marco Pinge, who won the Spanish Open, he won three times on the DP World Tour, really almost was without a card. They offered him, and he turned it down. So he gets a PGA Tour card. So I thought that was pretty telling. And he's friends with Rahm. So I don't know where it's headed. I thought Liv's not going away. I heard that over the weekend from a really trusted source that's in golf, that Liv is not going to go away. They don't really have – they have the money to make it work. They're trying not to go throw out all that crazy money to get people over. But they've got an issue because of the development side of it. If you're not going to get these college players, they're not going to stay. It's just very disjointed. And then some of the guys they paid are getting older, and they're not performing out there. So I don't know. And the PGA Tour seems to be rolling along, and I think the game of golf is so deep. We see that all the time. These college kids can really play. So the more pass they get, those are going to be tomorrow's stars. And they just have to go make them stars. They got to give them starts. They'll be stars once they get starts. And I think they're seeing that. I mean, Jackson Koivun, right? You get guys like that out there that can really play, that Michael Lasasso. I mean, they're obviously counting on a Nick Dunlap. You get guys like that out there that can really play, they will replace the void of the guys who have gone. I think the only way Liv really can make a splash is if they were able to go get a Rory, someone like that, to pay him a lot to get more other guys over to try to create more viewership, more momentum. But, you know, until they get world ranking points, they're going to be fighting an uphill battle. And the reason why they're not getting more players to go over there is if you haven't won a major, you're starting to realize you can't play on the Ryder Cup team and you can't play in the majors. And that doesn't entice anyone. If you're Rory and you've won every major, now you're exempt for all these years. Those are the times people make those jumps. So very disjointed. I wish that they could all come back together. I think you're going to start seeing the real telltale is some of these contracts are about to expire. And then what do those guys do? Are they going to come back to the PGA Tour? Are they just going to stay at LIV? That's the next big domino to start falling, because the LIV's been in existence now. Some of these guys have been over there 3 and 4 years. What do they do next? And they're not going to pay them that big upfront money. They're just paying them smaller money to stay on to play for big money. And then, you know, if they want to come back to the tour, they've got fines and suspensions. And then I don't think they're outlandish fines or suspensions. So we'll see. I'm hoping this new PGA Tour commissioner that starts, that's sort of in now, and that it really starts at the beginning of 26, that he'll realize for the good of the game, we got to figure out a way to blend all this back together. It's going to be one painful thing to do, and how you do it, who knows. But let's get a way to get everyone back together. But I don't think they're going away. It's just, I think they're probably trying to see what some of their talent does. It's unfortunate that they haven't been able just to come back together.
And lastly, just update us on Alabama men's and women's golf fall season expectations. And, of course, that carries over into the spring season in 2026. But it looks like both these teams have a chance to be very competitive.
Yeah, I mean, the women's team finished sixth last week. They're playing in Oklahoma starting today. That'll be a big telltale. There are a lot of good teams in the spill. They finished sixth in Illinois. They look like they're really improving. I don't know, maybe the top 25 team, top 20 to 25. The men's team wraps up the fall season at Ole Miss at Fallen Oak in Mississippi over this coming weekend. And it's a 3-day event, a really loaded field. They've had a great fall. William Jennings had a great fall. And I would say, you know, they're sitting in that, like, I think they're 11. They're going to be in that 8 to 12 ranking going into the spring. And, you know, the top eight teams to end the year make it to the match play at NCAA. So that's the targeted goal. Things like the men's team has really got it rolling, and the women's team is improving. So this week is keep your eye on the men's and women's golf scoreboard. This week should be a good telltale sign of where these teams stack up to end their fall season.
All right, I'm going to ask you one more question again, because I know you said there's several events left on the fall swing for the PGA Tour before we get to the new season. But when you look at JT, the steps he took in 2025, winning a tour event, you know, remained unbeaten in his career in Ryder's Cup singles, 4-0, did get a couple points at the Ryder Cup. I mean, he seems like that he's close, but again, his record recently in major championships, really outside of his two wins, for a player of his level, his major championship record is not good. What does he need to do to improve on that in 2026 and have a chance to win another major?
I mean, for him, I mean, it's really going out there. He's had a bad round, and some of it was a bad draw. Weather draw, and I think it's just getting better and being more consistent player in all these events. But ultimately, if you just said one thing, if he'll continue to improve his putting, because overall he's really a good ball striker and still one of the best iron players in golf. He's got a short game that's like a wizard. If he can continue to improve his driving accuracy and his putting, most importantly putting, he's going to win more majors. He's got all of the right stuff. That putt that he made at the Ryder Cup, that should give him as much confidence as he's ever had about he made a putt, right, that he needed to make to win something. And that's been the deficit portion of his game. So I hope that he builds on that and should have a good year. I think, you know, he's somebody that's a top 10 player in the world when you combine all the tours, if not top 5 to 7, and it's just getting out there and find, you know, a lot of golf is horses for courses, and getting comfortable with the greens, especially when putting is not your strength. So hopefully he continues to work hard. I think he's got a really good career, solid career ahead. And I what I saw at the Ryder Cup, maybe some of that, take some of that emotion to the to the regular events, to the tour events, because it obviously helps him in team events. And look, his mentor and idol, Tiger Woods, played with a lot of emotion, and especially even the majors, he played with more emotion. And he used it as a momentum builder. And JT is very well liked by the fans, and you can get the fans on your side. You know, everything starts going that way. We saw that with Tiger Woods. It wasn't like Tiger Woods at times was beating world-class players. He's winning majors against Bob Mays and Chris DeMarcos, right? But he had every fan, 95% of the fans behind him. And JT's got that type of following from the fans because of what he's done in the team events. So, you know, I think it's probably lean into a little bit more of the emotion side of it and just work at your putting and driving.
Yeah, I remember when he used to run a little bit hot at times. He seemed like he was a more effective player. So maybe he'll kind of recapture that outward emotional passion that he's shown in the past. Hey, great stuff as always, Casey. Thanks,
Gary.
All right, 10:53. We're going to come back and wrap up the Gary Harris Show right after this timeout.
Coming up on The Game with Ryan Fowler.
Coming up on the Monday edition of The Game, we'll do the good, the bad, and the ugly from Alabama's game against the Missouri Tigers. We'll do that starting at 2 p.m. We'll talk to Drew DeArmond, we'll talk to Martin Houston, and we'll take your phone calls on The Game with Ryan Fowler on Tide 100.9, 1230 WTBC, your home of Alabama Crimson Tide Sport.
The longest-running sports program in Tuscaloosa. The Game with Ryan Fowler. Weekdays from 2 to 6 p.m. on Tide 100.9 and streaming on the Tide 100.9 app.
If you haven't already, you've got to try Tuscaloosa's unique breakfast, brunch, and lunch concept. Brick and Spoon, downtown Tuscaloosa, Timberson Square. It's fresh food with a Cajun flair featuring a full bar with build-your-own Bloody Marys and mimosas. Open daily, 7 a.m. until 2 p.m. Available for after...
Feel the fun. Let's roll into Pearl River Resort. Must be 21 or older to play. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Los Tarascos has been serving Mexican favorites like burritos, fajitas, and quesadillas since 1999. Their new location is at 4100 Owen Parkway in Northport. And, of course, you can find Los Tarascos in Tuscaloosa at 110 Skyland Boulevard. The bar areas feature big-screen television so you can enjoy your favorite sporting events. Los Tarascos features daily happy hours.
South Generators. Online at TrueSouthGenerators.com. That's TrueSouthGenerators.com.
What does it mean to advertise and do your marketing with Town Square Media Tuscaloosa? Melissa started her business in 2014. What would you say to someone considering Town Square Media Tuscaloosa?
My experience with Town Square Media has been awesome, and I would definitely recommend it to anyone. I think that this is the first time in my marketing experience that I've been able to see my return on investment. I would definitely say in the past that has not been the case. In this, I like knowing that that's 100%. A lot of the marketing we've done has been radio. You guys have so much more to offer than that, whether it's, you know, websites from targeted marketing to radio. You are kind of a one-stop shop, and it makes doing marketing so much easier. So I would definitely recommend it.
For more info on marketing with Town Square Media Tuscaloosa, call 205-345-7200 or click on Advertise with Us on our website.
Tide 100.9, Tuscaloosa weather.
Dry weather continues through the week. The sky's sunny today, the high 82. Clear tonight with a low at 57. For tomorrow and Wednesday, a good supply of sunshine both days with warm afternoons. Highs between 82 and 85. I'm James Spann with the Alabama Weather Network on Tide 100.9. It's 72 degrees in Tuscaloosa.
Your home for Alabama Crimson Tide football. Tide 100.9 and streaming on the Tide 100.9 app.
All right, 10:58. Welcome back into the Gary Harris Show. And that's going to wrap it up for today's program. I'm sorry. I know we had a couple callers on the line that we could not get to. Apologize for that, Jeff and AC. Try to call back tomorrow if you can. Also, we didn't make it, didn't get to the Kalen DeBoer audio from Saturday, but that's the way it goes. So we did have plenty of guests, had some good phone calls, and we'll be back tomorrow morning. Press conference today at Alabama football with Kane Womack, Ryan Grubb, and Kalen DeBoer. And then tomorrow,
SEC Basketball Media Day over in Mount Brook for the basketball team. So something to look forward to there as well. All right, the Miller's Edge is coming up next at 11 a.m. And that's followed by the Deep South College Football Show at 1. And Ryan Fowler will take you home with the game from 2 until 6. For Chase Brumfield, I'm Gary Harris. Thanks for listening, everybody. And I'll talk to you again in the morning at 9 a.m. on the Gary Harris Show. Have a great day.